Hello and welcome back to the WealthFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle. The health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WealthFest and their presenting partner, KBC. I'm so excited to be back for a second series. We'll be speaking to another incredible lineup of industry experts, hearing their inspiring stories and motivating us to move well, eat well and live well. This podcast, supported by KBC, is just one of many health and wellness resources available on wellfest.ie to help you on your wellness journey. With thanks to KBC, we'll be tapping into a wealth of knowledge with our guests to empower even more people of all ages to prioritise their health, fitness and well-being. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. So, Rhiannon Lambert is a registered nutritionist, founder of leading Harley Street Clinic Retrition and best-selling author of Renourish. Rhiannon has worked with everyone from the MasterChef team and Olympic athletes to cardiologists and general practitioners in the NHS hospitals. Rhiannon is now helping many new families and those trying to conceive from her clinic and believes the importance of pre and postnatal nutrition can change lives for the better. Hey Rhiannon, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Hello, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's so good to have you on. How are you keeping?
Yeah, we're really good over here. Keeping well, just trying to keep focused and positive, I think.
What are the advantages? Because obviously now this was recorded a little bit before it's gone out. So what are you guys able to do over there at the moment?
So for me, obviously, as a mum, not even work-related, baby groups have just opened up, which means once a week my son gets to see somewhere that's not the house.
It's always a bonus, yeah.
Which is just really refreshing. And you can eat outside. Not that I want to right now, because the weather, as always, isn't wonderful.
And isn't it mad how even though the weather can be bad, that people are still embracing the rain and the cold just to be able to do it?
Exactly. True British weather kind of vibe going on there, but not one I'm currently advocating. I've got to admit, I'm just going to wait till the restaurants open before I head out, I think.
And where exactly are you right now, Rhiannon?
So just on the outskirts of London at the moment. So near the hub of everything, I suppose.
Lovely. Okay, so let's dive into it. So when you were growing up, did you always know that you wanted to be a nutritionist?
No. No. I mean, it wasn't exactly the cool thing to do. I don't think it was even a career path that I'd heard of when I was at school. I wanted to be a singer, a musician. I had no interest in science whatsoever. And I guess I got into it from being in the music industry. So it all happened for a reason.
Oh, how did that happen?
Yeah, I won a competition when I was 17 with Classic FM. I just uploaded a kind of singing video of myself, kind of mimicking. I had no idea what I was doing, but I've always been able to sing. So I kind of naturally mimicked an aria. It sounds so dodgy. And to anyone that's actually trained in classical music, they would be like, this is terrible. But
I mean, if you want, you can give us a bar or two now. Like, we're not going to say no to it.
I'm sure you wouldn't, but I'm not sure how the mic can handle a bit of soprano right now. But I won this competition. I got moved up to London and signed a record deal and started working on music, but it just didn't pan out. And the economy went in 2008. I mean, I'm talking a long time ago now. I don't think it's popular. You know, classical crossover kind of had its day. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was really making mainstream music anymore. And I think from being in the music industry, I witnessed so many bad dietary habits and advice and tips and focus on shape and size. And I went and enrolled myself in nutrition when I was 21, and the rest is kind of history.
It's such an amazing story to think, because they're both completely different careers, to be able to go, oh yeah, you know, I was just signing record deals and I was like, this, you know, didn't work out, so I went into being a nutritionist. And back then, okay, obviously it was probably a lot different to how it is now, you know, with how we consume the music industry and their you know, dietary mistakes, if you want to put it that way. How were you consuming that back in 2007, 2008? Like, where were you seeing this all happen?
Well, I was surrounded in it when I was doing gigs and shows and showcases. The language used back then was not appreciative like it is today. You know, it was very blunt. It would be, right, you're getting a bit chubby here, so I think you should go and maybe just do a juice diet for a few days.
You know, costumes. Literally that blunt?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It would be that blunt. And I would hear discussions, and sometimes I would do appearances at Fashion Week where the models would walk down the catwalk and I would be doing some kind of oohing and ahhing, you know, really mm-hmm. high-pitched ethereal tones at the side of the catwalk, you know, kind of funky music that they have. And I remember being backstage and overhearing some of the girls saying some really awful things. One of them, oh, you know, I don't want to get hungry, so I just chew the cotton wool, and things that were really...
Stop. Oh, yeah. My God. That is the first time I've ever heard that now.
Yeah. I mean, I almost feel irresponsible actually saying it on this podcast, mm-hmm. but I think times have changed, I hope. And it definitely instilled a poor relationship with food for me at a very young age. And I guess university saved me. I think I was kind of a bit fed up in a really dark place. I was a bit depressed. I was on antidepressants. And in fact, I went to the doctor for help and they gave me pills instead of saying, maybe you want to look at your lifestyle.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So nutrition definitely saved me. Being educated in the area, mm-hmm. I think, was the biggest blessing. And of course, it's become my career. So I feel so happy to be able to help others.
Which is great. Yeah. So what areas of nutrition are you most passionate about? You're like them all.
Dude, actually, I don't like them all. That's definitely... definitely not true. I think nutrition is fascinating, but as I've grown with, you know, I've done I've got a degree, an undergrad degree, a master's degree in it. I'm continually doing diplomas and continuing professional studies. So I've kind of delved into different areas that have taken my fancy over the years. And I've been through a period where I've done a lot on sports nutrition, working with different athletes, and it's been an incredible experience. And I still do a bit of that, a lot of weight management. But I think the things that I really love, the psychology surrounding nutrition, so relationships with food, and then also pre and postnatal, because now I have a son and a baby. That's an area that naturally, I think, has taken my interest a bit more.
It is so fascinating. It really is. And like, talking about nutrition and stuff, like obviously I had a browse of your Instagram before we did the interview. First of all, your Instagram is so aesthetic. You make your food look amazing. Whatever you're eating, you bring out the color. It always looks so nice. But like obviously that's just a picture on Instagram. And we do know that, as you know, as fascinating as an area like nutrition can be, there is some misinformation out there. And can you tell us about some of the biggest myths that you've ever come across?
Oh, gosh. where do I start? Misinformation, disinformation, it's everywhere. First of all, I would clarify it by saying I call it pseudoscience. So it would often come in the shape or form where people may even try and back up what they say with a study that's not actually done or is representative of what they're trying to achieve. For instance, somebody might say low carb diets are the answer for everybody to make sure they never get diabetes. You know, you could hear something really out there, because someone may have found one study that suggests that if you are type 2 diabetic, reducing your carbohydrate may have a, you know, help you stay in remission or help you reduce your risk of it getting to a poorer state. But actually, that's in people already with diabetes. So just because you eat carbohydrates doesn't mean you're going to get diabetes. That there's so many, I mean, sugar is bad for you is a blanket approach that I see all the time. I can't eat fruit because fruit contains too much sugar, which is all nonsense. You know, you need fruit. It's fructose. It's not the same sugar as white cane sugar that we're adding to our diet. It goes to the liver to be metabolized. It doesn't go in the bloodstream in the same way that eating a lollipop would do. Or there's all these ins and outs. It's very difficult to pick a few because my mind is now going in overdrive with all sorts of scary things that people are saying. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately it's so important for the general public that some kind of legislation does come into play on social media where people are protected, but equally education needs to be improved. So you know where to go. You know to go to a registered nutritionist or a registered dietitian for nutritional information, because, you know, I'm a level 3 PT, but I know firsthand from doing the course that I did not receive adequate nutritional information to be giving out diet plans. Information.
That is great to hear. I love the honesty, because naturally when you go to a PT, you assume that that would be their qualification as well, because you do get a diet plan, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And from personal experience doing it myself, but equally speaking to other personal trainers, we should be collaborating and working together. Mm-hmm. A PT does not have the depth of knowledge to recommend anything above the generic eat well plate that that the government will provide. So they should not be offering personalized nutrition. It's so complex. We're all so different with complete different genetics, health history requirements on a day-to-day basis. So it's, you know, there's a reason I take an hour and several follow-ups with my clients in the Retrition clinic, because it's complex.
Yeah, no, and that's great to hear. Do you think, okay, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, that when someone goes to like a PT, you know, that because they're kind of going to the PT for what could come across as aesthetic goals, that the diet plan they're receiving is more to benefit them from, you know, the aesthetic point of view rather than an actual health point of view. Do you get me?
Yeah, I think you mean results driven. So
it's results driven. Yeah. So they want to go, oh, I want to have abs, or I want to, and that's why they're restricting certain parts of their diet.
Yeah. Which any, I mean, I can't blanket every single PT. There are some amazing personal trainers out there that would never, you know, dream of doing this, but I know this has happened because I often pick up the pieces in the clinic, unfortunately, where it's really triggered some really bad relationships with body image and food. Often, if you're a personal trainer who isn't using their qualification ethically and doing things like this, they will want their client to stay with them for longer by giving them a meal plan as well, knowing that it's immensely restrictive and may help their client see results. Therefore, the client continues to book in and continues to stay with them. And they don't realize the long-term implications of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not sustainable. It can actually be dangerous, and clients can become malnourished. You can develop all sorts of deficiencies, iron deficiencies, vitamin D, a weakened immune system from over-exercising and under-eating. There's so many elements to consider. And like you said, the classic example, I want abs. Well, there's a genetic, you know, reason there. Everybody's got abs. Yes. They're just hidden under a layer of body fat. And we actually know that we've got intramuscular fat, which is muscle fat in our muscles. And then we've got muscles that are just below the skin. So fat that's just below the skin, ready to be released. And you can't control where that fat goes. That's genetic. Some people store it on their hips, their tummy, their bum, their arms, you know, everywhere.
It's so true. Yeah. I have no problem. I've admitted on the podcast before that I have gone through all those you know, phases, which you've, you know, said, like when I look back to say 4 years ago, when I was doing a DJ tour in like Mallorca, obviously in my head, I was like, all I was thinking about was getting to like a low body fat and being, you know, inverted commas ripped. But I've never felt, you know, as worse in my life as I did then. And then I remember getting my bloods done when I came home and I was told, yep, you're lacking in iron, you're lacking in B12, the whole lot.
Yeah.
And it was only after those results when I cleaned up my diet that, okay, I wasn't 7% body fat, but I've never felt better, you know?
Yeah. And thank you for your honesty there, because often behind the picture or the aesthetic ideal, which is nonsense actually, because this ideal we're all striving towards is set by society. It's not, you know, such a small percentage of the population, maybe below 5%, could ever look like that and be happy and healthy.
Yeah.
So we're all striving to something that the media has portrayed, and we won't be happy and healthy, and it won't help us live a long, you know, fulfilling life. It's crazy, isn't it?
How
we've all been subjected to it, I think, at some point.
Yeah, because it pops up on our timeline every day. Well, a lot's gone on in the last year, and I feel like everybody now, you know, is trying to improve and support their immune system. So while we have you here now, any tips on how we can do that?
Thank you for using the word support, because I think there's a lot of confusion between boosting immune system and supporting immune system, so much so that I think the government had to step in at some point last year, because there were so many crazy things flying around with COVID in the early days. Mm-hmm. You know, taking vitamin C tablets will prevent you from, you know, getting COVID or fight the disease. And I think even Trump was saying some nonsense, you know.
I think he, yeah.
obviously not,
just a little bit.
You know, drinking, what was it? Drinking
bleach.
Bleach.
I stocked up on it afterwards. I felt great. No, I'm joking. God, I can't be saying that.
No, that's highly dangerous. But I digress. What the question you asked is, what can people do to support the immune system? And that is going to be the unsexy answer, which is the perfect amount of exercise in their life and a balanced, healthy diet with all the color, the vitamins and minerals that they need. There's particular nutrients that can play a role, such as zinc, selenium, vitamin C, as we've mentioned before. Vitamin D plays a really important role with supporting the immune system as well. And actually, most people are deficient in vitamin D and need to be taking a supplement from around, I think it's September, October.
Especially over here in Ireland, you know, where the sun is this, you know, magical unicorn that we see very rarely, like, you know.
Yeah, I love the magical unicorn. Yeah, it really is over there, I guess. And Ireland's so beautiful, but you guys do definitely need those 10 micrograms, which is the recommended amount to supplement. So it's really important that you do eat well to prevent feeling run down. And I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I would give is that you don't need to take supplements to support your immune system. No supplement is going to be as available to your body in terms of absorption as eating real food or whole food. Omega-3 plays a very important role as well. So if you don't eat oily fish, then it's probably important to take an algae supplement or a vegan supplement. I'd actually recommend that over taking a fish supplement for many reasons, environmental, ethical. Yeah.
That's really interesting because I spent 5 years being a vegetarian. So fish was completely out of my diet. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the reason being is that the fish, the oily fish that we would classify as salmon, mackerel, sardines, tuna doesn't actually count anymore, which is really sad because of the state of the ocean and the way that things have gone. Tuna is no longer a source. But the fish eat the algae in the sea, and the algae contains the components of omega-3 that we would write down as EPA and DHA. Uh-huh. They're the kind of two components that you really want to be getting in your diet. And they eat it, and then that's how they get the omega-3. It's just absorbed well by eating oily fish. But we don't eat algae as humans, so we can take the algae supplement and get exactly the same, if not better, quality nutrition straight from the source, rather than creating more of a problem if we are trying to reduce our, you know, carbon footprint by consuming these options instead of the oily fish. But if you do consume fish, it's very easy. Just have one portion that's oily a week and one that's not, and you should be fine. But omega-3 is important because it supports our cells, the structure of our cells. It supports our brain health, our cognition, and all of that in return has a kind of wheel effect in our body that has a knock-on effect on our hormones, knock-on effect on our immune system. Everything works in tandem with nutrition. So you want to be getting those key nutrients, I think, to be healthy.
You mentioned one there that I've never heard of in my life, and I can't nod away here and pretend that I understood all of that. Did you say selenium? Was it selenium?
Yeah. And also one thing I should have said is iodine. So
I've heard of that before.
Yes. So let's start with iodine then go into selenium.
Okay.
So iodine is involved in brain health and thyroid health. So cognition, and it's so important. It's only really available though in, I'd say, fish and dairy products. So again, if you're vegetarian, you don't consume dairy, it's probably worth looking out for a supplement. And then selenium is a mineral, so you have vitamins and minerals, and selenium plays a really important role with immune response. And you can get selenium by eating three Brazil nuts, to be precise, a day.
Three?
No more. Yeah. Three is the magic number.
For your daily intake, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Your daily intake, because they're such a rich source of selenium. And you can get it in eggs as well and other seeds and things. But I'd say that's the easiest one. But it can play a really important role with something to do with reactive oxygen and inflammation inside the body. So selenium is just a really important micronutrient that has, you know, optimum health outcomes if you get enough of it.
All the supermarkets near us now be wondering why they're sold out of Brazil nuts all of a sudden. Like, yeah, all the listeners flocking to get their three Brazil nuts a day.
I will stress, three. Yeah, no more.
Well, we know what happens when you have more than three Brazil nuts now. Like, they rack up quick, they do. Let's talk about, you know, sustainability, you know, and it's more important than ever now. And meat-free options have become like a lot more mainstream, probably the best way of putting it, which is obviously great. Can you help us out when it comes, you know, like reading the likes of food labels properly? And what we should be looking out for, you know, if we can't tell something is too salty and or maybe a bit too processed, you know, because we're being thrown a lot, you know. You go online and you've got sponsored ads, you've got people who are influencers saying they're vegan and stuff. And it's kind of hard to figure out, you know, what is best for you and how to go about it the right way, you know?
I mean, it's a huge question. Everything you've just said is really valid. Let's cover those points. I think I'll start by just saying sustainability is incredibly important. And going plant-based, using that term, doesn't mean you have to, if you're somebody that doesn't want to give up meat, fish or dairy, you don't have to, just reduce it drastically. Mm-hmm. So have it maybe once a week, twice maximum, because at the moment we have a problem where people are consuming these items maybe at every single meal of every single day. Mm-hmm. Whereas there are so many other protein options if you're replacing the protein source itself that you can consider. Tofu is one of the best options. Soy products, wonderful for your health. Complete misconception that they are bad for us. They do not affect our hormones. And we actually have the most up-to-date research that came out in March 2021 that suggested that soy actually can reduce risk of breast cancer. It's really good for menopausal women getting hot flushes. It does not give men man boobs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because there is there is a myth now. Well, you've pretty much made it a myth. Yeah, that, you know, the consumption of soy reduces a male's testosterone levels.
And no, not, it's absolute nonsense.
I'm hoping not, because I spent 5 years eating it, so I'm feel like I've lost it or anything. So
no, it's honestly absolute nonsense. And I actually have a podcast episode on Food for Thought entirely devoted to an episode on soy, if anyone wants to learn just about soy. It's such a good protein source for mm-hmm. plant-based eaters, because it contains all the essential amino acids, which are the building blocks of protein. It's not high in saturated fat. It's low in saturated fat. And in fact, plant-based proteins are superior in a way sometimes to animal ones in the saturated fat department. Mm-hmm. However, what you've mentioned quite rightly is that a lot of these products that are made as replacements, so meat replacements particularly, are flavored to taste like meat. And they don't kind of embrace their own natural form. They try and mimic something else. And that means the salt increases, the sugar increases. And some options aren't even protein sources at all. Take jackfruit. There was a huge sore in the shop shelves for jackfruit. It's a fruit. It doesn't even contain protein yet. It was being used as pulled pork, I believe. It might taste great, but it's not the best option to give you a balanced plate and make sure you're not deficient in any of the key nutrients that you're not getting. I mean, the good thing about soy is that it also contains some omegas and all the other nutrients that you need, B12 in the diet. So there's lots to consider. I think the best thing for going plant-based is check you're not getting above 6 grams of salt a day. And it's mm-hmm. very easy to do that, because even two veggie sausages can contain up to 2.5 grams of salt. And you're nearly halfway there. So make sure you're keeping salt low. I think on average, we're consuming 8 grams, which is way too high.
Oh, way, okay.
Yeah, that's the latest stat from the National Diet and Nutrition Survey, the UK. So try and keep it lower. Look out for the salt on the pack. Often traffic light labels, if the company's chosen to use them, because they're not mandatory, can be really helpful. Look for green and orange maximum. Try and avoid red in terms of on the salt department. Mm-hmm. Added sugars, all that sort of thing. But variety is your best friend. If you're going plant-based, make sure you've got protein, carbs, veg, and a little bit of healthy fat at every meal. And you mix it up. Have beans and pulses one day with rice to make complete protein. The next day, have the tofu. The day after that, try some tempeh. And mm-hmm. the day after that, go for some corn. Again, microprotein, which is corn. Huge misconception. It's people think it's heavily processed and really bad for you. It's actually a fermented type of food, which is quite nutritious.
Oh, so that's good to know, because you literally, I thought it was. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it's not always vegan though. I think you need to check the back of the pack, because some mm-hmm. are made containing eggs. So if anybody is vegan, not plant-based, then they just want to check the back of the pack. I'm not going to garble on anymore.
You actually answered my next question, where I was going to ask you on tips on how to balance meat-free meals, because I feel like everything, you know, it becomes a more desirable product when there's protein added to it. Like, you know, there's like a chocolate bar that could have 10 grams or 8 grams of protein. And then because it has now got 10 grams of protein, they're like, oh, it's high in protein, and people will spend the extra euro on it, you know?
Crazy.
So hearing you talk about the different ways of doing it is, you know, it's great advice. So thank you so much for that, especially for somebody who went so long without eating meat. Listening to you list off those kind of things, I feel like I could have done it better, but you know what? I can do it going forward now, which is great. So
yeah, and don't make big changes overnight just like that. I think you've done
great. I made that mistake. I did, yeah. Rhiannon. I watched a video on meat production on the day after Christmas Day. And
oh, wow.
I know it was a bad idea, because I went downstairs to my dad and I was like, no more meat for me. I'm off it. And he was just like, are you still drunk from the night before? Or
yeah.
And it was the worst idea I could have done. Definitely was.
I mean, to avoid nutrient deficiencies, ideally, yeah, I you don't want to go full pelt like that, ideally. But I'm sure you managed to do it very well. And it's just for some people, it takes their bodies a little bit longer to adapt to converting nutrition from plant-based foods compared to what they did before with animal foods, because it takes a lot longer. Like omega-3 from avocados and seeds and things takes 10 times longer to convert to what you need in the body, which is why we say you need the algae supplements or you need to eat oily fish itself.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm learning so much here. I'm sure our listeners are too. This is great. I'm forgetting we have listeners right now. I feel like this is like a free consultation. Like
bespoke session.
Literally, yeah. Let's talk a bit about gut health, because it is a huge topic. So why is it so important and how can we proactively support our gut?
Oh, it's a fascinating area. It's one that's constantly emerging. And some people have spent their whole lives within my field or registered dietitians just studying gut health alone, because it's vast. So a quick overview, I guess, is that we know that we have 2 kilos, roughly, of what we weigh is actually bacteria, which is quite a lot. And that sits towards the end of the digestive tract, so more towards the colon area. And that bacteria can have a ratio of what you've probably heard of as friendly bacteria from previous marketing ads on the TV.
Yes.
Not so good bacteria. And lots of factors can dictate how much we have. It's like looking at a garden and wanting loads of different types of flowers to grow, but you've only got daffodils and you don't have enough of a mixture. Some people have a gut like that, where they've got a not very balanced gut microbiota. So that's the word we use, gut microbiota, for all the kind of living species down in that area. Now, we know that this bacteria is crucial for making things like short chain fatty acids, or basically happy hormone. So what it's doing constantly is creating happy hormones, creating pathways to our brain, talking. And we've got research that it could be linked with depression. So if you have a good garden down there and lots of different flowers and bacteria, then you're less likely to get depression and you may be more likely to maintain your weight. And it's huge. The interaction, it's kind of talking to our body all the time. So if a piece of bacteria eats a piece of food that we eat, so prebiotic food, we call it, it will then give out gas as a byproduct, or perhaps create some B vitamins. And what you want is to be eating tons of fiber to support a diverse garden and to get all those flowers growing. It's linked to so many areas of our health now, that, you know, our immune system. So around 70 to 90% of our immune system is found within our gut. And that's constantly talking. The microbes talk to our immune system, and there's lots of interactions. So the better you eat, the better your immune system, the better the messages from your brain telling you when you're hungry, when you're full, hormone production, everything. It's all so interlinked.
Wow.
Have I gone, is that an overview that makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, when I'm silent, it means that I am intrigued and interested in taking notes. But really quickly there, you mentioned fiber, and I think it's obviously, I don't mean it's similar to protein in the makeup of it, but I mean is in how it's given to us and how, you know, different people, you know, we're told different amounts that we need daily. You know, can you give us an ideal figure for, you know, how much fiber somebody should be eating a day?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think on average, we're getting 17 to 18 grams a day from the last bit of research that I saw, but we should be getting 30 grams a day.
Oh, wow.
I would say minimum. Yes, it's over, nearly double, I guess, if you're thinking about how much. People just are not getting enough. And there's a whole factor of reasons. First, the research says that 30 grams, and I mean diverse types of fibers, so not just eating the same type of foods every day. You need lots of different types. There are so many different types that you want to
eat. Yeah, so somebody like me who has a bowl of porridge in the morning and at night, you know, that's not cutting it.
I used to do that when I was a student on the bread line. Porridge would be my dinner.
Oh, but I love porridge. Like, it's,
me too.
You can mix it with everything, like, you know.
You can. I do have a good savory porridge recipe, actually, in my first book.
Oh, okay. I tend to be sweet. I love adding the L peanut butter now to it. Ooh. Almond milk and peanut butter. That's my thing.
That is the dream. Yeah. With some raspberries or something.
Yeah.
Yum. But porridge is great, but you want to get a diverse range of carbs. So maybe you can try quinoa porridge one morning, or brown rice porridge like they do over in Asia. They have rice porridge, different types of foods that we don't normally, we need to get creative basically. But the research is based on 30 grams having beneficial results, but some research says 50 grams.
Oh, wow.
which is the ultimate high.
And I think, yeah, I feel like my tummy would be in knots. Like,
yeah, you need to drink so much water when you increase, which is why, again, go plant-based slowly if it's something someone wants to do, because your water needs to increase, your digestion needs to get used to the amount of fiber you're eating. And it will, I promise you, you'll get more bowel movements, your gut will be better. Everything will be better the more fiber that you consume. But with a lot of water and slowly would be my advice.
Okay. And, you know, you spoke about there about how, you know, having good gut health, you know, impacts your mood. So in what way are food and mood linked then? Like, do you have like a suggested foods to some of your clients that you'd go, hey, these are happy foods? Or is that a ridiculous question to ask? Or
no, it's not ridiculous. And if I could count how many times I've been asked that question, because I think it's something we all wish we could get, right? Oh, I'm feeling a bit down.
Yeah, what can I eat?
Eat a banana and suddenly I'll feel amazing.
I mean, it would be,
if it worked that way, it would be incredible. But inside our body, we can do some things to manipulate the hormone production of serotonin and of dopamine. So we have, almost imagine Lego making a shape. We have building blocks like Lego that create proteins. And they're called amino acids. And there are two particular building blocks, tryptophan and tyrosine, that play a really important role in hormone production. So tryptophan, if you combine this piece of Lego, it's a little amino acid, with some carbohydrate that you're eating, because you need that to go with the protein for it to work, will create serotonin, which is your happy hormone. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of that is also made with our gut bacteria, like we've already discussed. Then the other funny word beginning with T, tyrosine, that protein creates dopamine, which is the feel-good factor. So you've got happy hormone and feel-good factor. And I think a lot of people probably have heard of dopamine in the context of, I don't know, drugs or something. It's all I can think of.
Physical activity. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean. But you can eat to create a bit more of those two hormones. And then in return, if you create more, especially serotonin, the happy hormone, you are more likely to create more melatonin, because it's linked in a circadian rhythm sleep cycle, which then helps you sleep longer, which then helps everything. The more sleep you get, the better. Sleep is so important for repair, recovery, every cellular interaction in our body. So yeah, that food definitely plays a role, but you really want to be looking at supporting your gut bacteria first before picking individual foods, and then make sure you always get carbs and protein together if you can at a meal.
I tell you, it is so interesting hear you break it up like that with the different components, because like in my head, I'm like, oh, I eat that. I like the taste of it. I feel happy for like an instant, you know, that kind of way. And then when you hear when you hear you describe how it works, it's like, wow, like, you know, our bodies are amazing, aren't they? Like what they can do.
Yeah. And that's, you know, you asked at the beginning, what's your favorite thing about nutritional supplements? This is definitely, I guess, another error I didn't mention. It's just, it's so fascinating, the interactions that happen, and it's unique to us all. And things can happen overnight. For instance, your gut bacteria, if you eat a better meal one day, you'll have an instant impact almost on changing that bacteria within a few hours. Whereas if you eat poorly for a week, it's not the end of the world, because then you can not undo, but you can then enhance the next week with eating better, and you'll feel better because your gut bacteria are happy. So it's all interlinked.
Sounds great. Well, how have things been for you now since, you know, the end is in sight? Can you give us any tips on how we can help with the stress of normal life resuming? I know myself, like I was sitting in traffic today for the first time in ages, and I was like, had the biggest frown on my face going, what is this?
I know. I haven't missed that, if I'm being honest. I haven't missed having to commute as often, and the rush of, for me, it was London life. My clinic is in Harley Street. I've actually grown this year in terms of clinicians I've had to hire because of the pandemic.
Great.
Had a huge,
congratulations.
I mean, it's great. Thank you. It's great for the business, but it's also really sad because, you know, so many people need help more than ever before. But we've been able to do that online, which is a huge bonus. So I think managing stress, I'm in a very fortunate position where my business hasn't gone. And I know a lot of people listening may have lost their job. They may have really hit rock bottom, and I've been there mental health wise with having a baby at the peak, the first ever wave back in April, where we had no idea what was going on. And all I can recommend is speaking to people. I know therapy for me was crucial at that point. Stress of having, perhaps you've got families at home, you're all on top of each other, you're driving each other crazy. Getting out for a walk at least once a day, even in the rain. I mean, even in the rain.
I love a good rain walk, you know. I love, like, you know, putting a bit of music in my ear, pretending I'm in some drama, you know, that
yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, but is that an Irish thing or is that just, you know,
no, I think, well, like, I think given our weather, like, you have to get used to it at some stage, you know.
Yeah.
And there's something nice about it. Like, do you know when it rains? I hate the in-between rain. I like when it's, like, pelting down, you know. If you want the, you want the all or nothing, you know what I mean?
Well, I love that attitude. And I think it's a really healthy one to have, because the minute we get in nature, and try and find somewhere if you can, even if you live in a built up area where there are a few trees, because there's some interesting research that if you look at nature, they're called fractals, that it can have an instant impact on your parasympathetic nervous system, which is the type of response in your body that helps you be calm and slow down and taking deep breaths. Sometimes I forget to breathe, like right now. Do a deep breath, and I know straight away that that will have had a little role in my parasympathetic nervous system and help my body just feel a bit of calm. So deep breathing, get out in nature and just talk to someone, because it's rubbish. Acknowledge that it's rubbish sometimes, and we just need to keep social interaction as much as we can.
That's so interesting about the trees and the research around that. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the study to hand.
No, that's okay. Like, you've told us so much now. I wouldn't expect you to know everything about that as well.
I know, it's not really my area, if
no.
I'm being honest.
Like, let's talk about the different trees and how they affect your good health. Can we do that?
Really? Tree hugging, for instance. Yeah. Maybe there's something there as well, but I don't know.
Would love to hear some tips as well for people who might be living alone. Have you ever lived alone?
Well, a long time ago now, because obviously I've got my son and my husband. But yes, I did very, very briefly, because to be honest, London life is all flat shares. And I moved to London when I was 17 and lived there for years. So it was all flat shares. But there was a brief stint when I was by myself, and I really had to schedule things in. I mean, I'm a creature of habit. I love a routine. Mm-hmm. And when you're by yourself, I think the best thing you can do is stick to your routine. It's every morning I get up, I go out for a walk, or I have breakfast and I go out for a walk. I phone one person at least once or twice that day. This is when I do my work. This is when I separate work from leisure time or having a bath or doing something else. Because especially if you live in a one bed flat, I know what that's like. Your kitchen is your living room, is your bedroom.
Yes.
And you can't get out of that little box environment. It especially in a pandemic, it's suffocating. So having the routine, and I would say exercising, is going to really help you deal with those adversities. That's really hard.
Rhiannon, I could talk to you for 6, 7, 8 more hours like on this, but obviously we're out of time here on for the podcast this week. But I'd love you to give us some main takeaways for our listeners right now from everything we spoke about, you know, maybe three quick points on how they can improve their day-to-day nutrition. Out of everything we've spoken about.
I mean, I think my overall philosophy of nutrition, I wrote this in my first book, Renourish, is, and I actually called it the 4 R's, but I can summarize it in 3, which is to make sure that you rehydrate. It's a really obvious, easy tip, but you are 60% water. Your mood is also improved when you drink more water. Your concentration levels improve, your productivity, all of it. So drink more water, you'll feel better. Then refuel, which is basically making sure that you eat those nourishing, balanced meals every day and you enjoy it. And then finally, it's respect yourself. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to nutrition and health, comparing yourself to other people is not useful. You need to respect that you are your own person, and what works for you won't work for someone else. We're all as unique, I guess, as our personalities. So rehydrate, refuel, and respect. And those will be the three, my 3 tips, my take homes.
Rhiannon Lambert, it has been amazing to talk to you. I know I've learned so much. I feel like some of the questions I was asking you were selfish, but I'm hoping that they benefit the people that were listening to us as well. For those who are listening to us right now, who'd love to keep up to date what you're up to and maybe learn a bit more, where can they find you?
Of course. No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed our chat today. There's a lot of resources I hope I've put out there to help people. So the Food for Thought podcast is probably a good one for all things nutrition and health. I have all the leading scientists and we have chats like that and break it all down. My Retrition social media platforms on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, newly on TikTok. I'm not sure how I feel. Yeah, I'm on there. I'll see how it goes. Do check me out if you're going over that way.
It's addictive. I love it though. I love it so much. I really do.
I do get stuck in a rabbit hole looking at things, but I'm currently writing, and there's a few books and things you can check out on Amazon or on my website, Renourish being the first one.
Great stuff. Rhiannon, thank you so much for joining us on the Wellfest podcast today in association with KBC. It was amazing.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Wellfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to check out wellfest.ie for more free health and wellness resources. See you next time.